Oh, that timing was impeccable. I don't think anyone heard
that's
that.
It's two in a row now.
I don't think anybody's heard that beer open, but that's what that sound was. In case you hear that at the first. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Play Podcast. I think we're up to 93 at the moment. I think this one's 93.
I am 93.
93. So. Ooh, getting real close to the 100. Imagine, 93 is. Imagine if the NRL Grand Final falls on that 100. That'll be awesome. Ooh. I haven't looked at that yet.
We'd have to work that one out, wouldn't we?
Yeah, so this one's about the Eastern and Western Conference Finals of the NBA season. May as well start with the Eastern Conference Finals because it's right in front of me. The Boston Celtics. well, it's not my favorite. So Boston Celtics and Miami Heat. And, the Heat took the conference in five games. And honestly, after the first two games, except for the first one a little bit, after the first two games, I thought, the Heat had this.
Well, no, you're right. Look, it started off, the game one started off with a bang, going to overtime. Jason Tatum sort of channeling his inner Luka Doncic at 106 all, trying to get a step back three to win the game for Boston. And, I guess we sort of, Miami was down. I think they were like down 10 points as well in the fourth quarter. So they did well to sort of rally back. A little bit, and then I guess we sort of fast forward to the block heard round the world with Bam Adebayo blocking Jason Tatum essentially with the ball inside the cylinder and bending Adebayo's left hand all the way back, but it was clean as clean could be. That was just unbelievable.
That guy, I mean I literally called him most improved for the year. Except, obviously, the winner was well deserved. Clearly, the winner was well deserved. But he, I guess it's just I think he's just matured really quick. If anything, it's probably
just gone to it. He went to another level throughout the season, and then inside this restart situation that they've had in Orlando, he's just gone to another level again. Like, it's whether or not it's just they're all just on pure and absolute focus because all they've got to do is just think about hoops and more hoops. And I guess there's no sort of outside. Yeah, there's no outside distractions. obviously
interference.
Obviously they live in Miami, so there would be plenty of outside outside curricular activities that could be done.
Just a couple.
It's at South Beach there with certain gentlemen's clubs and other alcoholic establishments that you'd be able to visit. So, he's just gone from strength to strength.
Yeah, I just think, and I mean, him aside, like, I just think it's pretty much how they've been the whole, I guess not even just this series, but every series, they just played well together. Goran Dragic top scored for 29 points, but everybody really shared the points. Everybody was pretty good. So
Jake Crowder had 22 points. Effort. Like, if you're getting that out of him, and then you're also getting 20 plus points from, like you said, Dragic, Jimmy Butler, and Bam also had 18. So you're getting contributions off the bench too, like Tyler, your main guy off the bench. If you can get those big contributions from, even if Iguodala sort of starts to get going or Jay Crowder, then you're looking pretty good. Cause like we've said before, Boston have got, obviously they've got the better starting five, but they just, they're just a little thin on bench talent.
Yeah. And I was trying to pinpoint why they're thin on bench talent. I mean, do you think, and I still think he's a phenomenal player, but do you think, I'm not trying to work out the best way to put this, do you think it was a necessary risk paying Kemba Walker what they had to pay Kemba Walker to get there, considering that they've got Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, and Jaylen Brown there? Because I just think they're skinny.
I guess they wanted that extra move to sort of put them over the top. I guess they're going to have to live with, we're going to smack you in the mouth with our starting five, and we're going to hope that our bench can contribute enough and keep you at bay. Like that's pretty much all that they can really do at the moment. Just, you know, as you get into this time of the year, like game one, yeah, even though it went into overtime, like all four of your five starters for Boston all played 40 plus minutes. So on the flip side, you have a look at the Heat, and only Butler and Adebayo played over 40 minutes. So Tyler Hero played 40 minutes off the bench, but if you've got those guys that can help you out in stretches, then your starters can come back a little bit fresher.
It happened in the second game as well. All their players pretty much played over 40 minutes, except for their center. But then Gordon Hayward played 30 minutes. So I think you're right. But they think they've probably – well, clearly they signed him because they thought it was a necessary edge to get over. I just think cap space-wise, it might have left them just a bit short, possibly. I don't know. They are very thin on the bench, really. I mean, they got six.
I mean, it's possible. Phenomenal. Look, you have a look at. I mean, you take it back. Game two bench scoring. You know, there wasn't a whole lot. Like only Miami had 16 points off the bench, and so did Boston. So everything, all the firepower in game two was all done by your starters. And then you have a look at game two as well. Basically, Miami outscore Boston by 20 points in the third quarter. They just light it up.
Yeah.
In the third quarter, like to start the game, you know, Duncan Robinson is on fire. Yeah. He hits four threes in the first quarter, has six for the game. You know, those are the kinds of games that he needs to get going.
If we fast forward, I guess, to sort of game four where Miami took their 3-1 lead, 112-109, fast forwarding purely because of I just want to talk about Tyler Hero. He's 37 points coming off the bench. I think I might have messaged you this, but is that guy a top? I mean, it's all hindsight now, but he looks like a top. He should have been a top five draft pick.
Well, supposedly when he went in for the workout with the Heat, they have a shooting drill that they run everybody through, whether they're free agents, whether they're rookies. And Tyler Hero come in there, and from what I've heard people talk about in the Miami area, I listened to the Dan Lebatard show on ESPN Radio, and they're a Miami-based radio show, and that they've basically have heard and have been told that Tyler Hero had come in and doing this shooting drill did better as a rookie than what Ray Allen did when he come in as a veteran.
Oh, interesting.
So I don't know what the shooting drill is, but they've got 3-point shooters that are coming in. They must run them through this certain drill that they do with everybody. And they said that Tyler Hero, it wasn't even close to that he outshone what Ray Allen had done. And you know, Ray Allen doesn't have to come in there and prove. Well, that's the thing. Ray Allen doesn't have to come in there and prove anything, does he? You know, he's Ray Allen. He's one of the greatest three-point shooters that the league's ever seen. Tyler Hero obviously had, you know, I guess whether it was a little chip on the shoulder or had just come in there and just totally shone, in that shoot-around drill.
But again, in that same game, I get Boston's starting five minus Daniel Theis because Gordon Hayward scored 14. The rest were 4 points, 4 points, and nothing. Again, Miami, Tyler Hero 37 points off the bench. They shared the points around. I didn't realize that. That's pretty interesting. With Tyler Hero, it's a interesting sort of stroke he's got. It's very clean. It's extremely clean.
Oh, yeah, it's super clean.
It's just, I don't know. It's interesting probably because he's 6'5", so he's not sort of too small, you know, in NBA terms, I suppose that's pretty average, but It's just an interesting, every time I watch him, it's just an interesting style because
it's a nice quick trigger too. That's what I like about it.
Yeah.
And if you just sort of want to compare that to, somebody that's in the league at the moment, that's got a super quick trigger and still a nice smooth action is Klay Thompson.
Yeah, that's right. And I noticed when I was doing some sort of research on him, that nearly all the players are either Kentucky boys or Marquette boys, which is very interesting.
So, yeah, that's right. Yeah, Jay Carrata and Jimmy Butler are from Marquette. So I think they're
and Adebayo and
a couple
and
of. Adebayo, that's right. Yeah, Duncan Robinson from Michigan. So yeah, there's a good spread there. But yeah, it's interesting. So, well, then if you sort of circle back to what Boston did in that game, and you know, they hung in there. I think at the half, I think Miami are only up. You know, they think they're only up 6 points at the half, and that's with Jason Tatum scoring a total of 0 points in the first half. That for the guy who everybody is sort of saying that this is basically his team now, and he ends up scoring, you know, he goes for 16 in the third quarter, but he can't have 0 points. In the first half, like that just cannot happen.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, you're right. I mean, even on that series, it's pretty evident that this is Jason Tatum's team. I think he would have averaged at least sort of 20 points per game. Most of the games he scored 20 points, but the best player can't have 0 points in the first half. No. That's just our first quarter. That just doesn't happen. On that fifth game, I kind of thought, you know, they were down 3-1 and they smacked really Miami pretty well in that 121-108. I kind of thought, okay, come back and then make a series out of it. Like that game, they were defensively great. I mean, Miami didn't play terribly really, but it wasn't the way they were playing generally.
I think it's just. To me, it's just one of those games where they've just had a below average 3-point shooting night. 7 for 36 total, 3-pointers from everybody. So you know, that's under 20%, and that's not really going to cut it. But you can't sort of have one of those nights, and you expect it to do well. Everything else I guess was fairly even. They out rebounded. The Boston Celtics out rebounded Miami by like plus 12. Plus eight on the offensive rebound. So
yeah,
that's something that they really had to sort of dominate on. And even though that they've got Bam there, the Miami Heat, but you'd think that the Celtics could possibly be a little bit better rebounding. Like, you know, you've got guys like Enes Kanter on the bench. He's only playing 10 or 12 minutes a game. Good rebounder. We've said it before. He's a good rebounder and he's a really good offensive rebounder. I think they could have used somebody like that.
I totally agree. I'm surprised personally how many minutes he got during this entire series.
Even when he was at the Knicks and when he was at OKC, like he was a defensive liability, and you know, and that's terrific. But when you need buckets, like and if you haven't got the biggest guys on the floor, like if you can't pay Tice all that often or anything, he's a really good option to come in and get you some rebounds.
I just noticed they went a lot of small ball during that series too, because Enes Kanter only played sort of 10 minutes, but with Gordon playing 30 minutes, they played a lot of Daniel Theis out and Gordon Hayward in. I'm not sure who played sort of center, but they played a little bit sort of small ball during that series, which I don't know. With someone like Bam Adebayo, I don't know if that's good, really. It was enough. You're right, but it was enough. Yeah, you can only do it for so long. It was just enough to enough to notice that it didn't work out for them, basically. So they, I just think Miami had the right mix, and they still had the right mix. Clearly, their team just, I mean, having Iguodala there, that experience, you know, he's, I guess, not getting many minutes, but he's chiming in when he sort of needs to, which is quite. Then Myers Leonard, who hasn't really played a lot of minutes, but they have that right mix.
They could definitely use him.
Yeah.
They're not gonna play a whole lot of Udonis Haslem. I don't think in this series. Like he's just there, sort of, I guess, for that experience factor and moral support and to sort of like they like to say, convey that Heat culture upon everybody and just sort of keep everybody in check. So Udonis Haslam is going to get next to 0 minutes, you know, in this, you know, well, in this series, and then obviously in the next series in the NBA Finals, you wouldn't think so. I think he's 40, Udonis Haslam. So not to say that he wouldn't still have, you know, any, and that's just amazing. Still on a team and still getting paid. So, you know, that's
you're
fantastic.
Right. He is 40 years old. That's exactly right. He's actually 40 years old. Correct. That game six at Miami won 125-113. Man, didn't Iguodala's that he got 4 of 4 in the 3-point. He, you know, there's a couple of sweet sort of shots he had there. They all hit pretty
that's
well
right.
3-point.
Yeah, I mean, it was I guess the game was there for the taking, and fairly even game. Yeah, pretty much right through, I think. And then you sort of, if you fast forward through to the fourth quarter, and it's still fairly even. I think I think Boston are only down two. With only about 5 minutes or 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter, Miami goes on a 13-0 run.
Yeah.
In like a 4 minute stretch where Boston just couldn't get anything working. Miami are pretty much scoring at will. You know, Bam's shooting 11 for 15 from the field in that game, 32 points, 14 rebounds. He's just stepping up massive, you know, especially there. But that 13-0 run, you know, in about a 4 minute period in that fourth quarter,
yeah,
was just the absolute death nail. And that was pretty much it. Like, you know, the Boston Celtics just, not, you can't, they didn't give up, but they, yeah, you could. It was pretty telltale signs that was it. Like, they were starting to feel the pressure. Like, you have a look at Jason Tatum. Like, he scored 26 points, had 11 assists, but he was 9 for 26 from the field. So, all their big guns are taking shots. Like, you have a look at it. Jaylen Brown's taking 17 shots. Marcus Smart's taking 22 shots. Like, he is just blazing away, 4 for 13 from downtown. You know, Kemba Walker's taken 15 shots. So it's, you know, Gordon Hayward could probably be worked into it a little bit more, playing 32 minutes, but only taking 12 shots. So whether or not they could sort of get him a little bit more involved, even though he's sort of come off that injury, do you know what I mean? Like, you know, all of their big guns, you know, all of their starting five guys, except for Tice, but, you know, they're all taking the majority of the shots, and unfortunately they just weren't falling. And the Heat shot 56% from the field throughout that game. Like, when you're shooting at a high efficiency, they nearly shot 50% from three. When you're shooting at that sort of high efficiency, you're hard to run down.
Gordon Hayward, just to bring up, he's an interesting sort of player. I had a horrific, and I mean very horrific injury. And that's just at the start of his Celtics career. And he's had a couple of little injuries in between. I mean, he's into next year will be his sort of his final year, which is a player option. So, I mean, he'll probably take that. It's only $34 million. So there's no doubt he'll sort of take that.
My heart bleeds for him. It's only $34 million. Like, oh.
But he'd be purely because he's been playing at the six. A player's not going to turn down $34 million in their own favor. So I don't think so. It's an interesting, for me, an interesting conundrum of what they do with Gordon Hayward. That'll mean, yes, that'll be in his final year, and he'll be unrestricted free agent. So that'll be a trade kicker for someone. You know, he came in to Boston, especially from Utah, as before Jason Tatum and all that blew up, as their big hope. What do they do with it? I don't know. He's a great player. I just don't know if he's ever fully recovered from those injuries.
No, and you rewind back a little bit to what Paul George, you know, Paul George essentially had, not the same injury, but, you know, an injury that was just as catastrophic as what Gordon Hayward's was, and he wasn't the same player for 2 years. So, you know, this is sort of, and it, yeah, it's a bit of a funny old season, this one. It can go into the off season. It'll be what he wants. You know, there could be, you know, a bit of a talking to between himself and Celtics management in, what do you want from me? Is this going to be permanent? Am I going to be on the bench here for the foreseeable future? And whether or not he wants to embrace that role, you know, are they going to try and work him into the starting? I don't know how you work him into the starting lineup when you've got Tatum, Brown, Smart, and Kemba Walker. You literally cannot fit him into the starting lineup.
Yeah.
So unless one of those other guys wants to come off the bench and embrace the bench, whether it's Jaylen Brown or Marcus Smart, they're the only two guys that I could think that you would maybe take off the bench and put Gordon Hayward into the starting lineup. I think that'll be the talk in the off season with management, between, you know, Gordon Hayward and Celtics, you know, Celtics brass. What's the end game here? Like, what are we, you know, obviously we know what the end game is. Like, they're going to be a top team in the East.
Yep.
What are we looking with my role as in Gordon Hayward? What are we looking with my role here in going forward? Because he hasn't really.
I don't know if he has a role. This was a series. That's really what I'm getting at.
Yeah, that's right. He worked back from injury, so
yeah.
That's fine. That's all well and good. But it'll be if look, to me, the only difference between being a starter and being a bench player in the NBA is when you're at home, you don't get to hear your name, you know, by the announcers, and you don't get all the fancy handshakes and everything like that with all the rest of the starters. Do you know what I mean? Like that to me, that's all it is. If you're playing, if you're playing starters minutes, if you're playing 34, 36 minutes a game, you're probably not going to hit out that much. But if you're playing, you know, anywhere up to 35 minutes on average per game, then who cares if you're on the bench to start with or not? Like it's in this current form of the Celtics, that's something that he's just going to have to accept if they're going to roll over this roster into next year.
I think they it's a good point actually, because I think like unlike other sports to me that where, you know, bench players, you know, I guess like if we're talking rugby league as an example, you know, a 14 is just as valuable as any of the 1 to 13 to me, if not more, because they can play a lot of positions or they can play anywhere. I think you're right. I think it's about, you know, it's possibly that they love that. You know, for NBA, they just don't seem to like it. I think you're right. I think that they like hearing their name at the start. And I'm wondering if they think that if they're a bench player, then their money, you know, the money that they earn can be slightly lower. It's an interesting one.
That's right as well. I think that, and whether that's a little bit sort of superficial as well, like, you know, good. Well, you'd think most team managements, when they look at players, that they're going to, you would hope that they would look at production and numbers and things like that and not whether they're coming off the bench. You know, Jamal Crawford and Lou Williams have done that as a, you know, they're sort of the outliers in this, but they're guys that have always putting up, you know, good numbers off the bench for an extended period of time. It's just what do they want to get out of this roster and out of this season? I still think that they need to go out there and get themselves a little bit more quality on the bench. Not to say that, you know, guys like Sammy Ogilvy, you know, Brad Wanamaker, who are sort of their guys that play a little bit more minutes than what, you know, Grant Williams, Robert Williams do. I think Javonte Green. Yeah, they're sort of your back end bench guys. Taco Falls there, but yeah, your guys that are getting most of those sort of extra minutes, I guess, off the bench are your Sammy Ogilvy and your Brad Wanamakers. And I just think they need that little bit of an upgrade on those guys.
Yeah, I think so.
And that will sort of take a lot of pressure off. You know, I guess your four, you could call them your four stars that. On your starting side.
Looking at it, for me, and I was just playing with the ESPN trade machine. I was thinking, like, what do they need? And like, he hasn't been playing bad, but he's definitely not a starting center. I think they need a center. So the trade machine I threw in there just of Gordon Hayward and just trying to match up contracts. And the one that came close and I thought was very interesting was Andre Drummond. Well, he wouldn't be too bad there because at the moment he's in purgatory to me at Cleveland.
Well, that's it. He's opted in. I think he says $26 million. I think for his opt-in contract, opt-in clause with the Cleveland Cavaliers. But he's, if he thought it was bad at the Pistons, oof.
I don't think he had a choice to go to Cleveland.
He's got another thing coming if he thinks it's going to be, any better at the Cavs.
I don't think he had a choice. I just think he was in purgatory. But then it's probably going away from what you're saying. Like, do you invest in another $26-28 million in a center and then have that really great starting five, or do you just sort of look for a mid-level $14 million center, which is very hard to come by? But if you look for one, and then like you said, invest on the bench a bit more. It's possible that they might go that. I don't see Gordon Hayward pass there after this year, unless
they're putting a little bit of jewelry on his finger at the end of next year, then whether or not he's going to want to say it's all right, whether or not he's going to want to stick around. So, and it just depends on how happy he is there too. He might be happy in sort of waiting out the longer process, so to speak. So, look, like I said, I don't know what his salary would be, but somebody like a Yusuf Nurkic could that wouldn't really fit for the Portland Trailblazers, but that's just sort of a guy that I could think of that I reckon that could really help them. And then you slide somebody like Daniel Theis on the bench. He's your sort of glue guy, your energy guy that comes in off the bench. Do you know what I mean? Like that's what's going to happen unless you put in Theis inside one of these trades.
He'll get $32 million next year because he opted in as well. Well, sorry, he hasn't opted in yet. But when your player opts in $32 million playing at the number six in the moment, I dare say he's going to opt into that. So that's not a bad one.
Look, that's just the first one.
Great for Boston. For Boston, but
that's what I mean. I just don't think that sort of really works in a whole lot with what Portland wants to do. Going forward, like I think he would be. He's a very important part of what they're going to do going into the future. But Gordon Hayward would absolutely sort of fit in, at Portland there. Do you know what I mean? If Carmelo Anthony, I'm pretty sure he's opting in for one more season, but he's not going to be there forever. So you've got almost a ready-made replacement there for Carmelo Anthony if you're going to play him at the three, and then Gordon Hayward plays at the three. So I think that would be your more long-term play by Portland. They could go along. Portland's still got Hassan Whiteside there as well, so that obviously they could slot him back into the starting lineup. But
we're talking about what they need next year. So it's kind of what we have been doing with the other ones, just where they're what Boston need. And I mean, again, full credit to Miami. Everybody said they did, they're kidding themselves. No one picked Miami to make decent conference finals. No one.
Only people in Miami.
Well, only people in Miami. True. On the other side was the Western Conference Finals. I picked this, clearly, because I'm a Lakers fan, but Lakers and Nuggets, Lakers took it in five games, 4-1. A lot of people obviously thought once they were 3-1 down, they thought, well, okay, Denver's going to do it again or come back and do it the last two series. But they also, they didn't play two players called LeBron James and Anthony Davis. So.
Oh, that's right. And that's. When you come out, like the Nuggets did in Game One, and okay, well and good, they scored 114 points, and there was a little bit of garbage time at the back end of the game. Portland on the brain. Denver outscores the Lakers by 12 points in the fourth quarter, You're getting a lot of garbage time there. Jokic and Murray only go for 21 each. it makes it hard. And Anthony Davis comes out and just totally blitzes everybody and scores 37 points in game one. And that's apparently the tied for the third highest in a finals debut by anybody, I think. So,
I think that was, if I remember reading it correctly, I think the other two were Michael Jordan and Kevin Durant, I think I read correctly. So, which doesn't really surprise me. Not Michael anyway. Kevin, yeah, but Michael, yeah, no, it probably doesn't really surprise me.
No, not really. Look, and the other thing too, they started JaVale McGee.
Yeah.
But they, I think that, with it throughout this series, like, I think they were going to throw as many large bodies at Jokic as they could, and they've got plenty of large bodies to throw at Jokic. Mm. So, Dwight Howard was pretty efficient. 13 points in 16 minutes.
Yeah.
Essentially, they sat him for that whole series against Houston. Like, they just were not going to get into a run fest with Dwight Howard on the floor playing against that run and gun style of Houston Rockets ball. So, he'll come into his sort of own a little bit, as this series sort of rolls on a little bit as we go through it. But, if you can get him rolling, I think he's a little bit more your guy that you want to go to other than JaVale McGee. I think he sort of offers a little bit more defensively than what McGee does.
I think it was smart. Going back to what you said, I think that was absolutely the smart thing to do, because Dwight Howard, as big as he is, he's not the quickest player, I suppose, like any centers really, if you want to really think about it. But
he's still pretty athletic, but he's not going to keep up in a run and gun
small game. No, small ball game. No, that's right. So they rested him enough. In this game, you put the nail on the head. They started JaVale McGee, and then they used Dwight Howard for 16 minutes just to put big bodies on Nikola Jokic, and it worked. Like, we spoke about Boston's, lack of death, but Lakers' death is a little bit underrated. It doesn't get the
kudos
like it really doesn't get.
Yeah. I actually don't mind the Lakers bench. Like, it could be better, but you got Kuz coming off the bench. You've got your glue guy there in super experienced in Rajon Rondo. So when you don't have LeBron carrying the ball up, then you've got Rajon Rondo. He's just one of the smartest guys. I couldn't believe how they utilized him and how they essentially crapped all over him in Dallas. I don't know what he did there. I'm not 100% sure. I haven't really sort of read into it, but he looked totally out of sync and in a funk there. New Orleans picks him up, and he was just super integral to that team.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad.
When they made the run a couple of years ago and they knocked off Portland, in a first-round sweep, and Rondo had I think in one of those first-round games, he had like a 22 or 23-assist game, and he had like 2 points. So it was just, I think it's not an underrated pickup that the Lakers got this year in grabbing Rajon Rondo. So he's your guy that's going to hold everything together when LeBron isn't on the court. And for a second wheel, essentially, as a point guard to come in and have him running your team when LeBron isn't is super valuable.
And, I'm talking about LeBron here. Like, the guy at 35 years old, and I think Charles Barkley said it best, he shouldn't be really been saying age, because it doesn't matter what age you are. If you can play good, you can play good. But, man, at 35 years old, God, I have not seen a regression at all. Maybe a little bit.
He's that little step slower. He's still got a lot of explosiveness when he goes to the basket. He's still a large human being. Like, he's essentially a 6'8" tight end. He's still a large human.
I like that.
He's still a large human.
So, oh, man, I love him as a tight end.
He can still play, you know, that bully ball. He doesn't really need a lot of that explosiveness, you know, as much as, say, somebody like a Russell Westbrook who's 4 inches shorter than him, you know, whose game is essentially predicated on that explosiveness and needing that. LeBron's got a good mid-range game. You know, he's got a good sort of back-to-the-basket game where he can sort of back players down. So
he's got a good passing game as well. Yeah, you're right. He adapted very well.
No, yeah, that's right. Like, he's there's always the comparison that he's the closest thing to Magic Johnson as what there has ever been.
Yeah.
So, you know, he probably doesn't quite have the height. He's got a little bit more build, but that's just what he is. Like, his court vision is second to none.
Do you think it took him
17 years or whatever it is, but you know, he led the league in assists this year.
That's right. Do you think, obviously except for the third game, but do you think just on the Denver side that they lean too much on Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray, which is fine. I'm not saying you can't do that. Especially in that first two games when they were down 2-0, they just got exposed a bit, and then I guess Lakers decided to put bodies on them at the start. I mean, they changed it in the third game. The third game, when Jeremy Grant getting 26, they obviously went, well, we can't just have our top two players, you know, keep shooting, getting the ball all the time, because it's not working.
That's right. Well, game two, essentially, I think Denver sort of threw that game away. Not so much threw that game away, but, yeah, I think they said, they gagged that game a little bit. You know, it's all your big guns that were scoring in that game. You know, LeBron had 26, AD had 31. Jamal Murray had 25. Jokic had 30. You know, AD hits that crazy buzzer beater for three for the win, where Mason Plumlee is just in absolute no man's land.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's just, how the hell did he – to me, he missed his assignment so badly. And it wasn't as if it was a clean look either by AD. And Jokic nearly got there.
And that wasn't even where Mason Plumlee was running, but – I mean, if you're going to...
He always had to run through his own player. He just got that lost on the inbound. It's just like, what the hell is he doing?
Well, generally, for me, or I suppose for any player, really, but generally, if someone's going to set a screen and you've lost your player, like AD was, he was on AD, then you call the one that's been set, the player that on your side that someone's setting a screen against. You say, you push you to AD and I'll push on the screen kind of thing. That didn't happen. He didn't react quick enough. He just didn't react.
But it was so quick. The shot had to go up quick. So, yeah, not that you can't blame the pace of the game, but, those are just split-second decisions that, unfortunately, just have to be made. And, they just got essentially – they just got so – you know, Plumlee got so lost. And it just sort of – I guess it sort of took him out a little bit. But yeah, the shot was amazing. You just don't think that game on the line. You just don't think that it's going to go to Anthony Davis for the three.
Oh, for sure. No, I mean, obviously LeBron. You would think LeBron. I mean, he got 30 points in that game. Sorry, I think
LeBron
he had 30.
Had 26.
Sorry. So. Yeah, he's a game finisher. So
no, well that's right. But you put your guys on there that you know. That and Anthony Davis is shooting more and more threes as this sort of this season and this restart and the playoffs and that have gone on. So he's obviously even his last year in New Orleans he was actually hitting the three, you know, on a fairly consistent basis. So he's getting and it's just how are you meant to defend that? Like he's 6'11" with the unbelievable length that he's got. How are you supposed to defend that?
I mean the only person they could and nearly did was Nikola Jokic. You're right. I don't know.
It's Jokic. That's right.
How. And he's got it again. You know, talking about sweet shots that I said at the start, man, that's a nice stroke he's got. It's a really nice.
That's what I mean. It's just to see that. You know, that's obviously the evolution of what's happening in the league at the moment. But yeah, if he can keep it consistent, and it makes him one of the most dangerous players in the league. He's got the handles. He handles it like a point guard. Yeah, if he can sort of really develop a good back to the basket move instead of a face, because he likes to face up a lot more than sort of back people down. He's got the length he can get above people, he can get underneath people, He can shoot the three. He's got a good elbow jumper. So he just offensively, he's one of the most complete players that's going around. It just so happens that he's 6 foot 11 and he's got like a wingspan of 7 foot two, 7 foot three.
I think, I mean, you're right. I think he is the most complete player in the NBA at the moment. And I,
well, you can't leave him open for three. You can't do it anymore.
And I believe, I personally believe if LeBron wasn't there at the Lakers, that he would be fighting Giannis for the MVP because he has every consistent tool. He was fighting Giannis for the defensive player of the year. You know, he still put up the numbers. He still put up enough numbers to warrant at least a look at the MVP. I mean, not as good as LeBron was with, you know, assists and certain things like that. But
no, that's right.
I think he is.
LeBron's got the more well-rounded game as a total, as a whole. But AD offensively is just, it's, I mean, he's just, give him another off season there and you know, a little bit more tutelage under LeBron James. It's scary what he could be.
I hope we don't be silly. Like, I mean, and they have to give him as much. I mean, it's obviously up to him. He can decide what he wants, but they have to give him he has to get the Supermax or whatever. He has to get the absolute most money.
He's not going anywhere. He's being groomed as the next big man, you know, the next generational big man that the Lakers have. Blah, blah, blah. So once he gets that little bit of jewelry, he's going to be put in the upper echelon of big men of the league. So he's not going anywhere near that dumpster fire that Chicago is, which a lot of people.
I know he wants that. I know he really, really wants that 23 jersey too. I was watching him on Twitter during the year, man. I mean, his Twitter handle's Ant Davis 23. He really wants that 23.
Well, if he's going to Chicago, that's just never going to happen.
No, well, wow, that's a good point. That's actually a phenomenally good point. I know LeBron would give it up to him. He has sort of mentioned that.
LeBron would. Yeah. But there is just no chance.
As
Vince McMahon would say, there is no chance in hell.
There's no chance that's going to happen.
Chicago Bulls will be pulling down the number 23 from the rafters. Like, that's just not going to happen.
That's not going to happen. I think the Lakers came into that with a great game plan, into this series with a great game plan. I think they did. I think what we said in the first game, I think they didn't so much bully Nikola Jokic, but they put big bodies on him, which Houston and certain other teams, they played Houston, but other teams sort of, well, Clippers, I should say, didn't really concentrate on Nikola Jokic. They put
I just don't think they had enough big bodies to throw at him. Like, you know, Montrezl Harrell is an undersized center. You know, you've got Zubac there, and he's just not going to be able to keep up with what Jokic can do. So you're outmatched a little bit there. You can't throw, you know, Kawhi Leonard or Paul George at, you know, your two better defenders on the squad at. Yeah. Jokic, because you'll just get murdered there. That's right. So you're better off trying to stop Jamal Murray. And look, yeah, Jamal Murray just, yeah, he's ascended as one of the stars in this restart and in these playoffs. Like, you really hope that he can, you know, continue on. If you sort of go to game four, where they sort of, I think Denver sort of let that one slip a little bit as well. Like, it was a 6-point win for the Lakers, but they couldn't match up very well with what the Lakers had to throw at him. And you know, Murray has 37 points, but you sort of look through Jokic, he only has 16 points. Jeremy Grant lit it up in game three, and he had 17 points in game four. Like, it's just, you know, this now for Denver is, this is the future is sitting on the bench.
Yeah, no,
that's,
I agree.
Michael Porter Jr.
I was going to talk about a few, I guess, the whole Denver Nuggets in a second. But I just thought with every game, if you look at nearly every game, they just started slow. The first quarter, I don't think there was any quarter at all, if I'm looking at it correctly, that they won that first quarter. They just started slow. No, sorry, game three they did, but it was only by two. I think that was their biggest problem.
Well, that's the game they won, wasn't it?
Well, that's a good point. Yeah, I think they just reacted slow. Like, Lakers sort of, took it to them in the first quarter, and once they reacted, it was okay. It was sort of close, but they just didn't react well enough in the first quarter. And that's sort of, for me, evident.
When you're playing from behind, and even though it's, you know, game four was a bit of a poor start, you know, they were down 7 at the quarter, but,
yeah,
it, you know, game five, you know, if you sort of fast forward to the series clincher, you know, Denver, you know, they're only 3 points behind. They're only 6 points down. They're 8 points down at the half. You know, that's not insurmountable by any stretch of the imagination. No. But when you're constantly being outscored, and it's just this is a team that you can't and you won't be able to come back from 3-1 down.
In
game five, like your big guns, you know, like your Jamal Murray, he was hampered with a foot injury. You know, even after changing his shoes, it just looked like it happened between game four and game five, and he was changing shoes throughout the game, and that wasn't helping. So it was unfortunate. You know, once game five rolled around, and they just couldn't quite get the production from their big stars.
That they needed.
Jeremy Grant again, you know, was equal top scorer with 20 points. That can't happen.
No, I mean it can for Jeremy Grant. Like, he had a great series. He had a very good
terrific series.
You're right. I mean, when your stars are Jamal Murray and Nikola Jokic, that just can't happen. But just that game five, just before we talk about the Nuggets, that was just such a LeBron sort of game. I know he got a triple double. And I know he got 38 points, but Manny knows how to take a stranglehold on a game. He's just
That's right. He just wasn't gonna let Denver come back at all. He's just like, nah, this is, you know, Anthony Davis might be putting up the bigger numbers throughout the playoffs and everything like that, but this was a game where LeBron is just like, righto, it's me time now, and I'm going to put the foot on the throat, and I'm just going to stomp the last little bit of life, you know, out of this series. And I think as you're seeing the series sort of go on a little bit too, that LeBron was putting himself more defensively on Jamal Murray. So as well as Murray played, you know, in this game, you know, in game five, he obviously wasn't that terrific. He's hampered with that foot injury. But when you've got somebody with the size of LeBron on you, then you've got to be just nothing less than spectacular to put up the eyeball popping numbers that Murray has throughout this postseason.
So we'll finish up talking about the Nuggets going forward. I think we're both in agreement here. They have the right ingredients. They're a young side still, very young side. You know, Nikola, they're stars. Like, Jamal Murray is 23, Nikola Jokic is 25. You mentioned Michael Porter, Jeremy Grant. I think he's 26, 27. God, he had a great final series. And I would, even though he'll be unrestricted this coming season, I'd re-sign Paul Millsap. He played great. That whole series.
It's just that little bit step slower. Like, there was some moments defensively. Yes, some moments they need that experience. I'll give you that. But some of the things, and you would have watched these games as well, man, some of the things that Millsap was sort of doing offensively, I think it was in game two and game three, he was brutal.
Oh my God,
he was brutal. He went up for a dunk. It looked like he was about 6 inches off the ground, and Danny Green just swatted it straight out of his hands, stood straight up and blocked him. It's just like, oh, wow. That was in game two. Like, just they need Millsap there for your experienced cool head, but going into next season, two players have to switch roles. Michael Porter Jr. needs to be in that starting lineup, and Paul Millsap needs to be on the bench.
Well, Paul Millsap is just coming off, and he's not going to get this money again, especially with COVID around. He's just coming off a 3-year, $90 million contract, so he's not going to get $30 million a year. So, which is fine. Like, you know, he'll probably get your $10 to $15 million, which means they'll probably get another mid-level player in. I agree. I still think Michael Porter, well, firstly, needs to be quiet. I mean, I'm not going to go into, he's only 22, but he needs to be quiet about, you know, wanting the ball and blah, blah, blah. I just think he needs to be a bit, little bit better
in
defensively.
In that side, that's just not going to happen. That's just not going to happen. Like, with, do you know what I mean? Like, he is going to be the third option if he's going to be anything on that side. Well, and
I don't know. Jeremy Grant was great.
If he thinks that he can be bigger, then he plays out his contract. And then he hits free agency and he goes somewhere else.
I think Jeremy Grant, it's just in that. Jeremy Grant was, you know, well, I don't say he's the third person, but God, he had a really, really good series. Really good series. You know, it wasn't great in that last game, but man, he had a really, just stood out more as a small forward. But I agree. I think Paul Millsap needs to move to the bench, and Michael Porter definitely needs to start. You know, he's only 22. Well, that's the other thing. It's just for his name. Like, it sounds like he's been around for ages, but he hasn't. This is technically his first season. So, he's only 22, Michael Porter Jr.
No, that's right. Well, he had those back injuries. That's right. He had those back injuries that essentially derail his season in Missouri. You know, I think he was, I just can't think of what number pick he was. I think he was like 13th pick. He just fell all the way to Denver in the draft, and they took a chance on him. They were essentially going to sit him, and that's what they did for the first year to try and get his back right. And, you know, he'd come back and they sort of eased him in a little bit, and now you're starting to sort of see the fruits of that rest. So he was 14th.
14th.
Yeah, so yep. He was right at the end of the lottery. I've got a funny feeling that that year Denver just missed out on the playoffs that year. I think it come down to them in Minnesota, I think. And that's why they fell into the bottom half of that in that lottery. And that's it. They took a chance. They took a punt. And you know,
I think it's a punt, personally. I think
absolutely.
Well, I mean, you've got past
you as a team.
Yeah.
If you've got the patience, then that is a good look to the future of what this team is. You know, Jokic is still young. Murray is still young. So you've got a good core of youngsters there, and they're the building blocks of the future.
Yeah, a lot of teams passed at him because they thought he wasn't. They just didn't want to trust his back and everything like that. Like,
well, that was it.
New York fans were hammering for Michael Porter Jr. and they took out Kevin Knox, which is my God. Well, yeah.
Not to say, look, I think Kevin Knox, he had a pretty good season at college. I think Kevin Knox, is he Kentucky? I'm pretty sure he's Kentucky.
So
when you've got that lineage there, and you've had the 1 year under Calipari, and he has absolutely not stood up to expectations in the NBA. His couple of seasons, Kevin Knox. Like, I think they expected a lot more out of him. So whether or not there's a little bit too much of weight of expectation, especially in New York, like there's. When you're a rookie coming out of there, unless you're just an absolute stud, an absolute superstar, the media and the fan expectation there, like you talk about, you know, we talk about entitled Brisbane Broncos fans. Good God, the New York Knicks fans are entitled.
But two picks. I'm just looking at this draft, actually, because it wasn't a bad draft. That was the infamous Luka Doncic going to Dallas draft, which it's. And, you know, Trae Young was great, but that's still, like, you know, Luka Doncic is worldly above. But
They're both generational players, but they're both generational players in different ways.
Two picks later from the New York, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander was picked by Charlotte, so another Kentucky player. So, man, imagine if he was at New York. That's I know they had a couple of players.
Well, and who's to say that the weight of expectations wouldn't cripple him there in New York? Like, I mean, you look at the Knicks fans and a lot of Knicks fans, I guess the ones that live in New York, they're delusional. They expect every single person. I mean, they haven't been relevant in 20 years since they made the finals in 2000. as an eight seed with Larry Johnson and those guys. They haven't been relevant. They've been to like two playoff series, and even New Orleans has been to more playoff series than the Knicks have in the past 20 years. It's insane.
The problem with the Knicks, just so we finish up, the problem I have personally with the Knicks is the Knicks fans. You can't. You know, they're going about James Dolan, and don't get me wrong, he's not the greatest owner, but they're also the ones buying the season tickets. The season holding tickets.
No, that's right.
So he just thinks, oh well, they're gonna keep paying money. I can really do what the hell I want. If I draft whatever I want, I'll free agent whoever I want. The only way that guy's gonna know is if they stop paying for season tickets. That's the only way. It's their own fault, really. And everyone goes about New York, and it's in every sport. I mean, look at the draft. What happens when New York Giants especially New York Jets.
They go ridiculously crazy. They are just unbelievably horrendous. Both of those teams this year. Good grief. Yeah,
what I mean, but look at their fans. The way their fans go on about when they had the draft. Like, it doesn't matter who they pick, they all just whinge and boo and all that. So except for the infamous Peyton Manning one all the way back to the Giants. So that's a whole different ball game.
Eli Manning.
Eli Manning, sorry, not Peyton. Yeah, Eli Manning. That was more of a forced move than anything, but...
Yeah.
That's a whole different story. I guess that'll do it, unless you had anything else for the Western Eastern Conference Finals?
No, well, not really. Like, I guess there was a little bit of news that sort of come out throughout between the conference semis and the conference finals, and boy, it developed quick and... was, you know, resolved even quicker, I guess. We had Doc Rivers and the LA Clippers, parting ways, a mutual parting of ways throughout these last little bits of the playoffs. I guess, Doc Rivers is sort of, he's been the casualty of the disappointing season that the Clippers have had. And he's essentially taking it on the chest.
I get it. I mean, it's for them, the way they've invested, it's championship or bust. He got picked up by Philadelphia 76ers for 5 years, which, they say 5 years, but that doesn't mean anything in coaching carousels these days. But They were pretty hard in for Mike D'Antoni for a very long time, up until Doc Rivers became available. My concern with Doc Rivers, and it's not the guy himself, is he a bit, he's only won one championship in 2008. Is he a little, I don't know, I feel like he's a little bit overhyped. Just a little bit. You don't think
so? You can say it. We're in the trust tree.
I think
tree.
He is. No, I think, I honestly think, and I'm not saying, like, he's one of the better coaches that are out there, but I'll put it this way, I would have taken him over D'Antoni, but I probably would have taken, I would have seen him on par with Tyronn Lue, because what's the difference of what Tyronn Lue's done to what's he done? I think it's just that influence that he has. That's the only thing I think that got him over the line.
I think that's what it is. I think he's personally extremely well respected in coaching circles.
That's probably the difference.
And they're not going to, they're not going to sort of, poo all over their own sort of class. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's just
I get that. I'm not. Like, Mike D'Antoni's great. I'm not the biggest fan of a small ball game. I still think there is huge need for a center. I think, I know the game's going away from that true center like a Shaquille O'Neal or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or any really center back in those sort of days. Your center's got to be just as agile as your point guard and can shoot the three. But I don't like having a small ball lineup, and clearly it doesn't work. So if they were going to do that at Philadelphia,
you still need rim protectors. It's essentially what the game is sort of built on. Like you can't just have five guys run out there that are between 6'3" and 6'7". Like that, just you can't do it. you got to have somebody that's going to protect the basket, and it just even with a different coach there at Houston, I think that their game philosophy is going to be extremely different now that D'Antoni's not there. I think there's rumors floating around that D'Antoni looks like that he could be being interviewed for the Clippers job. And that a run and gun team with the Clippers, that's not going to happen. Like, Kawhi Leonard's not going to be able to last a season doing that. His load management numbers, he'll be playing 30 games a season.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Tyronn Lue's the assistant coach at the Clippers at the moment. So I think that's where they'll possibly lean towards. They need a strong coach. They don't need like a rook coach. They need a championship coach. And that's D'Antoni's not even really a championship coach. With D'Antoni, and I'm only going off what Wojnarowski has said, the Pacers are pretty hard on getting him. And he doesn't mind the setup there at the moment. So
there's guys there, like I said, you go there, there's Nate McMillan still out there looking for a job. Tyronn Lue is going to be out there possibly looking for a job. Jason Kidd, Dave Yeager. It took, 3 days for Philadelphia. Philadelphia had looked at D'Antoni, and I can't remember who else they'd looked at. And then all of a sudden, Doc Rivers comes on the scene, and then, they fly him to Philly. And then whammo, 3 days later, he's been named the head coach. So there is just going to be...
It's an interesting,
if there wasn't already expectations on Philadelphia, now that they've got this championship pedigree coach there, that is just gigantic pressure that's going to be put on those three guys there in Harris, Embiid, and Simmons.
Speaking of Harris, I think if anyone's going to benefit having Doc Rivers there, it's going to be Harris. He played his absolute best season in
Doc Rivers.
I can't wait to see. I think Embiid's. Ben Simmons, Australian, all that. Embiid is their best player. I mean, it's not even close. But if he can somehow develop Ben Simmons, a jump shot out of Ben Simmons could be phenomenal. I mean, he made the second team. I know we'll talk about this next week, but it's all NBA. So if he can develop him into a jump shot, they could be good. He'll give him at least a year to see how it'll go, and then look at it changing it next year. I don't think you'd be absolutely silly to not give it a try and then just sort of see what happens personally. But it'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting to see what Doc's going to do. Obviously, they still have the mindset of that, in a way they do, but they don't have the mindset of that they have a championship squad. They can
all
win
NBA
it.
Third team.
Yeah.
So which still, you know, that essentially puts you into the top 15 players of the league. So that's up there. And like you said, next week, next year it'll probably be next week we'll go through the NBA finals, and then we'll go through the all rookie teams, all defensive teams, and all NBA teams. So I think there's been a few snubs that a few people were a little bit shirty about for the all NBA team. I think the all rookie team and all defensive teams were pretty straightforward, but
just wanted with the rookie team, I know we'll talk about it next time because we're running out of time, but for Zion to get in the first rookie team just on those minimal games, just that guy I'm not giving him high expectations because I know how you are about people with high expectations, especially with your team. But man, that guy's he is going well. That's another team as well. He's going to be phenomenal. Yeah, I know you don't like the high expectations, but he is going to be. That's just the way he's going to be. Look what he did in 20 games?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was 19 games.
I know you don't like it.
19 games pre-COVID, and but he was a little underwhelming when they come back in, into the restart in Orlando. I think he might have got a little bit soggy while he was on the outside, not in quarantine, and they were an extreme disappointment. And that was the whole reason why this eight game. Mini season before the playoffs started. He was the only reason. You can't tell me anything different. He was the only reason that this, you know, playoff setup and everything was designed for, you know, 13 or 12 teams out of the West to try and get into the playoffs, like this little stupid mini tournament thing. It was the only reason that they did that. The Pelicans disappointed, and all I can say is kind of sucked into the NBA. You just put the eight best players in. It cost Memphis their spot.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true.
If you're Memphis and their fans and their organization, you'd be pissed.
Ah, that beautiful wild card, hey? How much do you love it?
I think it's the greatest. It's just the greatest idea ever. Like, let's have a team that's 12 games under 500 who makes ninth and give them, you know, just a snowball's chance in hell of getting into the playoffs. Like, yeah, it could happen, but it's just ridiculous. More than half the league of the NBA makes the playoffs. 16 teams out of 30 make the playoffs. You can't extend that.
You love it. You love it in every sport. You think it's such a great idea.
It's genius. Absolute genius.
I guess we'll finish up on this NBA podcast. That was that was about an hour. That was good talking about the Eastern and Western Conference Finals. Gearing up obviously for the Lakers in Miami, so they'll be the decider. Who is going to win the NBA championship?
Miami is going to be an overwhelming underdog in that in that series. But look, they haven't made the NBA finals by fluke. So
they haven't.
Yeah, you know, if you're LA, I'd be seriously watching out for the Miami Heat. But you know, when you've got two of the biggest stars in the league, like it's going to be LA's to lose.
It's going to be LA's to lose. And that's from what you said. They have the top two, nearly the top two best in the league at the moment. I wouldn't say they're the top two, but I'd say top five or top six best in the league, which is crazy on one team. And that just have enough depth. Yeah.
LeBron James, this is his 10th NBA finals. I think he only trails like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Bill Russell as having the most finals appearances. And, you know, if it all goes according to plan, then good on him. He's going to be 4-6 in the finals.
that's a little snide thing. But, you know, for 10 appearances, but I think I read somewhere he's beat a lot of teams to 10 finals appearances.
Exactly. That's right.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, that's right. He's beaten teams. Team. You know, franchises. Yeah, like Yeah, in saying that, that's not really a comparable sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, you could do that with a lot of people. You could, yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's just,
That's a good point.
The NBA and the infomercial that is LeBron James. So, yeah,
that's ESPN. If you go on Facebook, it doesn't matter how many you can scroll through. Probably every second article is about LeBron James. It's absolutely phenomenal how much SportsCenter. Wow, over LeBron James.
Oh, yeah, no, it's right. Yeah, it's right. They just swoon over him. Like, you just see, you know, all of them, they just slobber all over him every time he gets in front of the camera. It's almost disgusting in some ways. Like, it just, and now that he's with you know, the darling team of the NBA in the LA Lakers, you know how much I love the LA Lakers.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you're my friend. You like them.
Like I said, everyone just slobbers and drools all over him, and you're like, oh, well, give me a break.
You know, in hindsight, but he does take a lot of stuff in check. It's not like he perpetrates a lot of that stuff. You know, even in that finals, this probably did perpetrate a little bit, where he sat down while they're doing the whole announcement when they won that Western Conference final. But I don't think he perpetrates a lot of it. I think a lot of it's just from what they do. I don't think he goes out there and says, you know, he talks himself up a big game and everything like that. He talks about team. Well, lately at least, anyway.
Hey, well, as Kid Rock said, it ain't bragging if you back it up.
That's right. That's a great
I'm pretty sure there's a few expletives in there, but we'll roll with that.
That's a great way to finish. Well, that'll do it for this pod. Don't forget to follow us on our socials, Twitter and Facebook, and you can get our pods everywhere, especially on Gimco, in gimco.com.au. Shout out to Gimco, of course, Mojo, King and Dom. It's just phenomenal having them on there. So Very good.
Yeah, we're actually on that. They've got their own podcast network on Spotify as well, Gimco Podcast Network, and all of our stuff's on that as well. So if you either search for us, the Final Play Podcast on Spotify, we're sort of down the search list a little bit. So if you're looking for us for the first time, we're not actually right up the top. So yeah,
We had a unique name too. That's ridiculous.
No, it's right. I can't believe it. Like it's what a pretty crappy search engine they've got. Give me a break.
What a phenomenal name, Final Play.
We're also on the Gimco Podcast Network on Spotify as well. So Spotify is the go. We love Spotify. We don't like a certain fruit.
You will. By the 100th one, you will. Trust me. By the 100th one,
you will. We're going to hold you to that.
All right. You can hold me to that. Well, my name's Jason Wildcard Smith.
Oh, my God.
I knew that would trigger you.
I am Miles. The only good fruit is plum.
Oh, that's so good. All right. Have a good week, everyone. I can't. That's phenomenal. Oh, yeah, that was great. I can't top that. All right. See ya. I can't top that.